And here now is one of their recent stories that I've not seen anywhere else. Wallabies being transported in the South Pacific 12,000 years ago in a canoe. The scientist involved is Dylan Gaffney, whom I met at his college, Hartford, in Oxford. Tell me from the beginning, what put you on the track of going to excavate and look and examine the evidence that you wrote up about the transportation of, in this case, wallabies?
This was part of a project, the first project actually in West Papua, the western part of New Guinea, so just north of Australia. The first project there in 30 years archaeologically, and we were looking for the earliest dispersals of humans, earliest dispersals out of Africa into Eurasia and then into the Pacific area.
How did you know where to look?
Finding sites in these islands is very challenging, mostly because they're rainforested, so there's a lot of forest cover that we have to deal with. You can't just go out into the islands and sort of look. You have to be very strategic about finding these places. And so we look for specific geological zones, often limestone zones, where we can find caves. And in those caves, it's usually a good place to find sediment that has built up over tens of thousands of years and where people have been living in these, inside these caves.
So where was this one?
The cave in question is called Malolo, which is right inside Waigeo Island's inland sea. So Waigeo Island is this large island off the coast of New Guinea. It has this big bay in the middle of it, a big saltwater bay, and in that bay is a cave called Malolo, and that's where we dug for these artifacts.
So what did you find as you dug down?
When we dig back through time in these caves, we dig back centimetre by centimetre, and we find things like hearths where people have been making fires inside the cave. We find stone tools, which people have been using for cutting, butchery, these kind of activities. We find animal bones, and in this case, tens of thousands of animal bones, as well as sometimes organic artifacts such as bone tools and so on.
And how is it you put a picture together that there had been transportation, that's 12,800 years ago, of wallabies? What were the signs that put together to make that story?
So in examining animal bones that we found from these caves, we look at them under the microscope, essentially. At the university, we take them, look under a series of different microscopes to identify the species of these bones. So then we know what animals people are hunting, the diet of people in the past. And so we can quite precisely determine the species, the kinds of animals, and therefore we identify a species of wallaby called Dorcopsis.
The wallaby, now I automatically think of Australian wallabies. Was there sufficient land bridges so that you got movement of these animals across?
One interesting thing about Waigeo Island is that it was always disconnected from New Guinea. We know right back through time into the Pleistocene, into the Ice Ages, even 50,000 years ago, it was always disconnected from New Guinea. So therefore we know the fact that we find wallabies on Waigeo Island and they're native to New Guinea, it implies to us that they've been transported somehow across water from New Guinea to Waigeo. And in the case of our excavations, we argued that this was translocation by humans, humans actually moving these animals.
And was that actually, as it said in one of the articles, the first time they had evidence of the transport of larger animals in canoes?
This is evidence for the first translocation westwards from New Guinea into the islands of Indonesia, what is today Indonesia. But there is some evidence from the Bismarck Archipelago in Papua New Guinea, which is even earlier, and this is about 20,000 years ago, although the dates are a little bit broad in terms of there is some wiggle room in those dates. But it's about 20,000 years ago in which we see humans translocating couscous, essentially possums, from the mainland of New Guinea into the Bismarck Archipelago.
And were these creatures, possums or wallabies, alive or dead?
We speculate that they were captured and reared and taken as pets, released into these islands, perhaps released deliberately to create a population of animals that could then be hunted. So quite a strategic activity. We argue they were released live because we find these animals cropping up in the archaeological sequences again and again. So it's not just one animal that's been translocated dead. It's a live population, we argue.
Have you ever imagined what it was like with a canoe, a feral trip with a bouncy animal like a wallaby on it?
Yeah, sort of like a prehistoric Noah's Ark or something like that. Well, it's quite possible. And we do have ethnographic, so modern anthropological observations of people who live around rainforests in Borneo and the Amazon. And people there do carry around pet animals. They do capture wild animals, rear them. In the parts of West Papua that I've worked, every village that you go to has pet animals from the forest. There's one village that I've been to where every house has a pet cockatoo. And so it's very feasible, and we can see examples from the ethnography of how people would have captured these animals and then put them in their boats, taken them to new islands, perhaps even transported them deliberately for trading, a prehistoric wildlife trade.
Of course, there was a story 4,000 years ago that dogs, which became dingoes, were brought across from Macassar by boat 4,000 years ago or something like that. That still stands up.
Yeah, so the examples of canids, so dogs and later pigs, as well as chickens, these are all animals that eventually disperse through Southeast Asia into the Pacific area. In the case of dingoes, these are the animals that do get to Australia, whereas pigs, for some reason, do not get to Australia. But this is part of a later stage of this process, and so our evidence is giving us a much earlier window into this long-term history of humans interacting with animals and moving them.
It's a fascinating story, going back, as I said, nearly 13,000 years. Are you going to go back there shortly?
Well, I've just returned from the islands, from a month of excavations in the West Papuan Islands, and we are every year going back, finding new sites, digging new sites, uncovering new artifacts and new insights into the lives of these people in the past.
With the help of Indonesian archaeologists as well?
Yeah, so an excellent team of local and international researchers. So we have researchers from Australian universities, British, New Zealand universities, but we have a core team of Papuan archaeologists and anthropologists that we work with who grew up in the region and know the local archaeology expertly.
Final question. You actually described wallabies as coming from Papua New Guinea. Was this a time when there was some sort of connection on land with Australia so that we share the origin?
Yeah, so until about 8,000 years ago, New Guinea and Australia were connected as one continent called Sahul. So we know that New Guinea and Australia shared movements of animals and earlier in time people as well. So this was one continent that was connected, but the offshore islands like the Bismarck Archipelago and what is today Indonesia, they were always disconnected. They were always islands.
A long way to travel from Oxford for you, but never mind.
That's part of the fun, isn't it? To go to places very far away and spend time there, spend months excavating.
I was with Dr. Dylan Gaffney, who before going to Hertford College, Oxford, was with the University of Otago in Dunedin, New Zealand.